Hello and welcome to Speak the Words of Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
This is a podcast where we're slowly but surely going through the story of the Cosmere, the Stormlight Archive, a little more specifically. Currently on book three, Oathbringer. That's crazy. Book three of four, Mango. We're almost caught up.
We're at the beginning of book three, and these two books are bigger, so we're probably less than halfway, actually.
All right, but like just under halfway. But also, we're already on page 129. So, you know, we're getting there. We're getting there in this book.
Out of how many pages?
1,200.
That's what I thought. Anyway, moving on.
Anyways, Mango, we touched on a lot last time. Do you remember what happened?
No.
No? All right, neither do I. So,
it's been a while. It's been a full week. Yeah.
So last time, because of Thanksgiving, yes. Last time, we got our first Shallan chapter. There was another murder. That was the big thing in the Shallan POV. There was another murder that was identical to the way Sadeas was killed. And Adolin has been put in charge of investigating these murders.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Fun.
And Renarin's being weird. He's just watching everybody like he knows something.
I mean, he does, but...
Yeah, he knows a lot of things. Kaladin is continuing to track the Voidbringers, and a Ardent wanted to bang, which Syl pointed out, and Syl was like... I've been doing investigating, and Kaladin like, please don't do that anymore. Please stop.
Oh, yeah, and then we talked about the funny fan art.
Yes.
That someone made.
Renarin healed Adolin's arm, and we talked about spiritual ideals and such. How you perceive yourself and how the healing works. And we saw a flashback where Dalinar fucking murdered some people.
Oh, yeah. And allegedly that archer guy became like his right-hand man.
Yeah, but he's dead in the present day.
Because it's like, hey, I won't kill your entire village if you work for me.
Yeah, he respects strong fighters.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's weird that that guy became loyal to Dalinar after Dalinar threatened. Like,
yeah.
Hey, I only... won't kill your entire
if you do this
if you join me.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird that he didn't like stab him in the back later on, or at least try to leave.
I think it's also like, I think these people probably didn't truly start to respect Dalinar until when the books are starting and he's like making his changes. I think for a lot of these people, they're just along with the ride because, like, if they don't, he'll kill them and everybody that they love.
Yeah, that's true.
We start this week on chapter 12, Negotiations. It has Dalinar's symbol, and the epigraph reads, I ask not that you forgive me, not that you even understand. From Oathbringer, Preface. Dalinar stood beside the glass windows in an upper floor room of Urethiru, hands clasped behind his back. These windows seemed a mark of defiance, a symbol of what the Radiance had meant. They had stood above the pettiness of world politics, and because of that height, they could see so far. You idolize them, said a distant voice in his head. They were men like you, no better, no worse. I find that encouraging, Dalinar whispered back. If they were like us, then it means we can be like them. They eventually betrayed us. Do not forget that. Why? What happened? What changed them? The Stormfather fell silent. Please, tell me. Some things are better left forgotten. You of all men should understand this, considering the hole in your mind and the person who once filled it. Dalinar drew in a sharp breath, stung by the words. The Emperor of Aesir has contacted them by Spanreed, so Gox, and Dalinar invites him to visit Urethiru via the Oathgate. He thanks Dalinar for the warning about the Everstorm and tells him that his warning makes them... or makes him specifically an official friend to Aesir. Dalinar tells Gox that he's honored, though wishes that he could have become a friend through happier circumstances, and he asks Gox once again to come to Urethiru to discuss the future of Roshar. Gox again dodges this request and instead says that since Gavilar was slain by Zeth along with the previous Azish Primes, there is now a bond between Alethkar and Aesir. Dalinar grew frustrated that he was back to engaging in politics like in the war camps. He remembered when he had united through violence, the memory seeming more vivid lately. Navani suggests an offer of aid to get them to come. They again slightly change the subject to talk about the new enemy. The Voidbringers did not attack them either, and they are in negotiations with them, in order to stall so they can build up their fortifications. Dalinar urges them to allow him to come there through the portal, but they report that it no longer works. Navani and Teshiv believe that they are lying. The Azish send signed affidavits that the portal does not function as a portal, which Kalami points out is obvious since a Radiant isn't operating. It basically says that when turned off, the device doesn't work. The Azish agree to share information for now, but that is it, and then end the conversation. Dalinar is frustrated
with
the little...
So Gox is very much like, either they just don't want Alethkar anywhere near, or he doesn't want them to see, oh, the Emperor is like 12.
Yeah, and I think he's also very new to this and being influenced by, like, the viziers that kind of... the, like, elder statesmen.
Yeah.
Dalinar is frustrated with the little progress gained with the Azish, and they worry that the negotiations, like the group that's assembled to do these to talk with the different powers, are worried that Aesir negotiating with the Voidbringers could mean that they're considering switching sides, and they believe that Aesir is essential in getting the rest of the countries in that region to ally with them. Next, the Queen of Thelenna, Brightness Fen Ranmadi, Renamdi, makes contact herself, not writing by a scribe. Dalinar extends an invitation for her to come see Eurythiru in person. Fen tells Dalinar to cut the shit and asks what he really wants. Navani notes that she likes Fen. Dalinar tells her that he's being sincere and that the world is changing. Fen asks what clued him into that fact. Was it that their slaves all suddenly became Voidbringers, or was it the storm that blew the wrong way, ripping their cities apart? Aladar notes that Queen Fen seems to be in a bad mood, but Navani insists that the fact that she's being so straightforward is a good sign. Dalinar asks about the Thalen Parshmen, and Fen tells him that they stole the best Thalen ships and escaped the city. Dalinar is shocked that they can sail, that they had just sailed away without attacking, and Fen says that while there were some small scuffles, by the time the Thalens had recovered from the Everstorm, the Voidbringers were sailing away in a grand fleet of royal warships and private trading vessels. Fen says that Thalen City is in shambles and that she has to rebuild her city. She doesn't have time for a sightseeing trip. Dalinar says that they cannot ignore the Voidbringers and that he wants to convene a grand conference of kings to fight the threat. He points out that Eurythiru is the natural location of the meeting and tells her that the Knights Radiant have returned. He offers to restore the Oathgate in Thalen City so that she can travel to Eurythiru with ease. Aladar is also there and he notes that they need a Radiant to unlock their the Thalen City Oathgate, which means that Kaladin would have to be the one to go to Thalen City since he's the only one that can fly, and they don't even know when he'll be able to go. Because Thalen City's like on the, like, there's an ocean between, or there's a lot of water between Alethkar and Thalen City.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mega continent, so obviously you could go over land, but it would
take
a while.
So they can't unlock it from the inside? Or from
they need
Eurythiru?
No, they need to go to the other place to unlock it.
Mm.
They can unlock their side of the Oathgate, but they can't unlock, like, it's like there's locks on both sides of the door, if that makes sense.
I don't like that, but okay.
I think it's smart. If somebody takes over Eurythiru, you don't want them to have, like, instant access to a ton of places over the world.
Yeah, but also I would think that they would have just left one side unlocked.
It is interesting. What's going on? Why are they all locked? Fen says that her merchants are intrigued by the Oath Gates and is welcome and... Yeah, and she would like to take any information about them from Dalinar that he'll give, but she isn't interested in a conference of kings. Dalinar offers to have Alethi troops come and help her rebuild the city, which kind of freaks her out. She isn't super eager to have the most violent army on Roshar in her lands.
Fair.
Dalinar tells her to search among her people for budding Knights Radiant, as they are the key to working the Oathgate. He explains to her that multiple Radiants have manifested near the Shattered Plains, and he explains to her the basics of the Spren Bond. He says it's likely that there were already those in Thalen City that have sworn oaths. Aladar says that giving up their knowledge of the Knights Radiant puts them at a disadvantage, and Dalinar tells Fenn that they're happy to send their own Radiants to train any discovered in Thelenna, which is like the bigger country. And he also says that any Radiant has the right to join the rest of them in Yirithiru. Fenn ends the meeting and tells Dalinar that they'll consider his offers and inform him of any discoveries they make regarding the Voidbringers. Navani says that it's a bad sign that Fenn reverts to formal speak at the end of the meeting, and Dalinar feels demoralized by the first two interactions. They talk to the Princess of Ysir next, followed by the Prince of Tashik. Neither gave him more than vague answers. Without the Azish Emperor's blessing, he wouldn't be able to get any of the smaller Makabaki kingdoms to commit. Perhaps the Imuli or the Tukari would listen, but he'd only ever get one of those two, considering their long-standing feud. At the end of the last conference, Dalinar stretched, feeling worn down, and this wasn't the end of it. He would have discussions with the monarchs of Eri, the Oathgate at Ralalorum was in their lands, making them important, and they held sway over nearby Rira, which had another Oathgate. Beyond that, of course, there were the Shin to deal with. They hated using span reeds, so Navani had poked at them through a Thalen merchant who had been willing to relay information. Dalinar runs into Elikar on his way out of the room. "Your Majesty," Dalinar said, "I'm glad you could make the meeting. Are you feeling better?" "Why do they refuse you, uncle?" Elikar asked. "Do they think perhaps you will try to usurp their thrones?" "Elikar." "You likely think I say this in spite," the king said. "I don't. You're better than I am. A better soldier, a better person, and certainly a better king. You do yourself a disservice, Elikar. You must—" "Oh, save your platitudes, Dalinar. For once in your life, just be honest with me." "You think I haven't been? Perhaps you have been, at times. Perhaps the liar here is me, lying to tell myself I could do this, that I could be a fraction of the man my father was. No, don't interrupt me, Dalinar. Let me have my say. Voidbringers, ancient cities full of wonder, the desolations?" Elikar shook his head. Perhaps I'm a fine king. Not extraordinary, but not an abject failure. But in the face of these events, the world needs better than fine. Elikar, what are you saying? Mother, Brightness Teshuv, would you witness something for me? Don't do this, son. We all must accept the consequences of our actions, uncle, Elikar said. I've been learning this very slowly, as I can be as dense as a stone. But, uncle, am I your king? Yes. Well, I shouldn't be. He knelt. Dalinar Kolin, Elikar said in a loud voice, I swear to you now, there are princes and high princes. Why not kings and high kings? I give an oath, immutable in witness, that I accept you as my monarch. As Alethkar is to me, I am to you. You did ask for this, uncle. Not specifically in words, but it is the only place we could have gone. You have slowly been taking command ever since you decided to trust those visions. I've tried to include you, Dalinar said. You are right, Elikar. I'm sorry. Are you? Are you really? I'm sorry for your pain. I'm sorry that I didn't handle this better. I'm sorry that this must be. Before you make this oath, tell me what you expect that it entails. I've already said the words, Elikar said, growing red-faced. Before witnesses, it's done. Oh, stand up, Dalinar said. Don't be dramatic. If you really want to swear this oath, I'll let you. But let's not pretend you can sweep into a room, shout a few words, and assume it's a legal contract. Won't even let me abdicate with dignity. You're not abdicating, Navani said, joining them. Elikar, you intend to shove your uncle into a position above you? He's right to ask. What will this mean for Alethkar? He should give up his lands to his heir. Dalinar is a king of somewhere else, after all. Dalinar, High King of Yirithiru, maybe the Shattered Plains. Dalinar must stay out of the direct management of my lands. He can give me commands, but I decide how to see them accomplished. It sounds reasonable, Navani said, glancing at Dalinar. Reasonable, but gut-wrenching. The kingdom he'd fought for, the kingdom he'd forged in pain, exhaustion, and blood, now rejected him. I can accept these terms, though at times I might need to give commands to your high princes. As long as they're in your domain, Elikar said, I consider them under your authority. While they visit Yirithiru or the Shattered Plains, command as you wish. When they return to my kingdom, you must go through me. Very well, though we need to work this out with scribes before we make the change officially. And before we go too far, we should make certain there is still an Alethkar for you to rule. I've been thinking the same thing, uncle. I want to lead our forces to Alethkar and recapture our homeland. Something is wrong in Kolinar. More than these riots and my wife's supposed behavior, more than the Spanreeds going still. The enemy is doing something in the city. I'll take an army to stop it and save the kingdom. Elikar, leading troops?
Wait, Elikar has a wife?
Yeah, in the queen regent.
Who?
Her name is Aesudan. Her and his son have been in Alethkar this whole time while he's been fighting the war on the Shattered Plains.
Wait, so the queen that's going crazy in...
is his wife.
Oh, I thought that was like... I don't know who I thought that was.
Yeah, no, it's Elokar's wife.
Oh. Ooh. Hey, Elokar, your wife's been acting as the Queen of Hearts and... off with her head!
Elokar, Dalinar said, I've been considering something. The Oathgate is attached to the palace itself. We don't need to march an army all the way to Alethkar. All we need to do is restore that device. Once it works, we can transport our forces into the city to secure the palace, restore order, and fend off the Voidbringers. Get into the city, Elokar said. Uncle, to do that, we might need an army in the first place. No, a small team could reach Kolinar far faster than an army. As long as there was a Radiant with them, they could sneak in, restore the Oathgate, and open the way for the rest of us. Elokar perked up. Yes, I'll do it, Uncle. I'll take a team and reclaim our home. Aesudan is there. If the rioting is still happening, she's fighting against it. That wasn't what the reports had suggested to Dalinar. If anything, the queen was the cause of the riots. It is fitting that their king should be the one who saves them. I will see that you have whatever resources you need, Elokar. I'll do it. I'll save Alethkar. I need one of your Radiants. The hero, preferably. The hero? The bridgeman. The soldier. He needs to go with me, so if I screw up and fail, someone will be there to save the city anyway. Dalinar blinked. That's very... I've had ample chances to reflect lately, Uncle. The Almighty has preserved me, despite my stupidity. I'll bring the bridgeman with me and I'll observe him. Figure out why he's so special. See if he'll teach me to be like him. And if I fail... well, Alethkar is in safe hands regardless, right? Dalinar nodded, bemused. I need to make plans. I've only just recovered from my wounds, but I can't leave until the hero returns anyway. Could he fly me and my chosen team to the city? That would certainly be the fastest way. I will want every report we've had from Kolinar, and I need to study the Oathgate device in person. Yes, and have drawings done comparing it to the one in the city. And he beamed. Thank you, Uncle. Thank you for believing in me, if only this small amount. Dalinar nodded to him, and Elokar retreated, a spring in his step. So Elokar is going to go reclaim Kolinar.
Nice. And good luck dealing with your wife, though.
Yeah. Yeah. You have no idea.
Yeah, she's kind of the reason everything's gone bad there. Not trying to stop things from going bad. You probably want to side with the rioters.
And they have started putting into effect... Dalinar becoming High King of Urithiru, which essentially makes him leave the Alethi government, or monarchy.
Interesting.
I definitely get the vibe from this that Elokar was like ready to just say, fuck it, deal with it yourself. But then everybody was like pushing him to hold on to some control anyways. And that's when he kind of pivots into like, okay, the High Princess still answer to me, but you give me orders and I'll decide whether to pass them on. But I get the vibe that Elokar was ready to hand the whole thing off to Dalinar.
Yeah. I mean, I got that vibe too at first, but then he said, okay, well, you give me orders. And then I was like, okay. Yeah. That actually makes him a little more compelling because he's not just like, you know what? F it, I'm done. You deal with it.
Remember when I said that I started to like Elokar after the end of Words of Radiance? At first I felt really bad for him because like the ending of Words of Radiance is really depressing for him.
Oh yeah, very depressing.
Goes into a breakdown. And then at the beginning of this book, the way he just is like, I'm ready to be a hero. Like I'm going to learn from Kaladin. You give me orders and I'll rule Alethkar, but like you clearly need to be above me. Like I think he becomes really compelling at this point. Mm-hmm. One of the scribes, Kalami, called to him from the span read, which had activated again. And I'm going to read what was written. Your Majesty, I consider your offer generous and your advice wise. We have located the device you call an Oathgate. One of my people has come forward and remarkably claims to be a Radiant. Her spren directed her to speak with me. We plan to use her shard blade to test the device. If it works, I will come to you in all haste. It is well that someone is attempting to organize a resistance to the evils that befall us. The nations of Roshar must put aside their squabbles, and the reemergence of the holy city of Urithiru is proof to me that the Almighty guides your hand. I look forward to counseling with you and adding my forces to yours in a joint operation to protect these lands. And Dalinar is like, who sent that? And they say, it was sent by Taravangian, king of Yakaved and Karbranth. The words warmed Dalinar. Someone had listened. Someone was willing to join him. Bless that man. Bless him. If Dalinar failed everywhere else, at least he would have King Taravangian at his side. And that is the end of chapter 12.
Dalinar. Speaking of, what's Taravangian up to?
You're going to find out when he shows up in soon.
Soon? That's not soon enough.
He's coming to Urithiru. He's the only one that agreed. I wonder why. Chapter 13 is titled Chaperone.
He knows how to play the game.
Mm-hmm. Chapter 13 is titled Chaperone, and it has Shallan's symbol, and the epigraph reads, I ask only that you read or listen to these words, from Oathbringer, Preface. Shallan is in her room in Sabariel's section of Urithiru, practicing with Stormlight. She used it to shift her appearance to that of Vales. Her hair was black, her hands were calloused and worked. She would put together a full costume later. For now, she was just in her nightgown. She practiced Vale's walk and her voice, which was deeper and rougher than Shallan's. Somebody knocks outside her room. She removes her illusion of Vale and tells the person to come in, expecting it to be Polona. Adolin comes in with a large plate of food and a bunch of books. He stumbles when he sees her, and Shallan sends him away while she dresses. They flirt through the doorway while he waits for her to dress, and Shallan is like, oh, I'm really lucky that Adolin is my betrothed. I better not fuck this up. And then he enters into her room to eat. Adolin asks if it's proper to be there alone, and she says that they aren't alone, since Pattern is there. Prince Adolin, Shallan said, I believe you've heard my friend's voice before. Let me introduce you formally. This is Pattern. Adolin knelt, reverent, and stared at the mesmerizing geometries. Your spren, Adolin said. A Shallan spren. Pattern sniffed in annoyance at that. He's called a cryptic. Every order of Radiant bonds a different variety of spren, and that bond lets me do what I do. Craft illusions, Adolin said softly, like the one with the map the other day. Shallan smiles and creates a small illusion of Adolin in shardplate that's about the size of a doll to show off. Adolin says her abilities are incredible and asks why she pretends to be a different order, because remember, she's pretending to be an Elfcaller. Shallan says that it might give them an edge and that sometimes secrets are important. Anyway, Shallan said, Pattern, you're to be our chaperone tonight. What? Pattern said, is a chaperone. That is someone who watches two young people when they are together to make certain they don't do anything inappropriate. Inappropriate, Pattern said, such as dividing by zero? What? Shallan asked. Look, just keep an eye on us. It will be all right.
Thanks, Pattern.
Pattern hummed. Shallan ignores her pain and tries to savor the moment. Adolin tries to get her to eat some of his spicy curry, and she rejects it, wondering how men can taste anything beneath all the spice they put on their food. Adolin prods her, telling her that nobody is around to see it. Or to see her eat it. Pattern buzzed. Is this the inappropriate thing I'm supposed to stop you from doing? No, Shallan said, and Pattern settled back down. Perhaps a chaperone who believes basically everything I tell him isn't going to be the most effective. She tries a bite of the spicy curry and immediately regrets it. Her eyes fill with tears and she gulps down as much water as she can, then wipes her tongue with a napkin. I hate you, she said, drinking his water next. Adolin chuckled. Oh, Pattern said suddenly. You were talking about mating. I'm to make sure you don't accidentally mate, as mating is forbidden by human society until you have first performed appropriate rituals. Yes, yes, Dictates of custom require following certain patterns before you copulate. I've been studying this.
Pattern, be quiet.
Oh, Storm Father, Shallan said. Very well, you two, Pattern said. No mating. No mating. He hummed to himself as if pleased. Shallan tries to change the subject, and Adolin produces a report from Aladar's team that questioned the second murder victim's friends and family. He also had brought books about Makabaki, since she had mentioned to Dalinar that she didn't know much about the region.
Oh, how romantic. Yeah. Murder mysteries and books.
Dude, she loves it. She's like, you brought me books? That's so nice.
Because books, but what were the books about again?
Makabaki, one of the political regions. She loves to learn things. So, like, for her, she's like, the fact that he thought to bring me books and not, like, roses or like generic.
Well, okay, like I can understand the candies. Books. I just don't understand the political books.
I think it's because like when Dalinar had been disappointed that she didn't know much, she seemed kind of embarrassed. Oh. So I think she wants to step up.
Oh, okay. Okay, that works. But murder mysteries?
Yeah. Well, the murder one is like, hey, we got to solve this. So let's work together on this, please. Because I'm stupid and blonde and Adolin. So help. She seems shocked that he thought to bring Adolin's her books.
Stupid, but he's not that stupid.
No, it's true. And Adolin tells her that Jasnah and Navani made sure that he had been read to in his youth. Adolin says that he is worried that she wouldn't want to move forward with the betrothal now that she was a Knight Radiant and he's just a normal person. He's worried that he's going to screw everything up, which Shallan is shocked at because she's worried about the exact same thing. Adolin says that he isn't good at relationships, and Shallan says that she thinks that everyone is an idiot about them. It's worse for me, Adolin said. Adolin, dear, the last man I had a romantic interest in was not only an ardent, forbidden to court me in the first place, but also turned out to be an assassin who was merely trying to obtain my favor so he could get close to Jasnah. I think you overestimate everyone else's capability in this regard. He stopped pacing. An assassin? Seriously, he almost killed me with a loaf of poisoned bread. Wow, I have to hear this story. Fortunately, I just told it to you. His name was Capsule, and he was so incredibly sweet to me that I can almost forgive him for trying to kill me. Adolin grinned. Well, it's nice to hear that I don't have a high bar to jump. All I have to do is not poison you. Though you shouldn't be telling me about past lovers. You'll make me jealous. Please, Shallan said. You've courted, like, half the war camps. It's not that bad, isn't it? From what I hear, I'd have to go to Herdaz to find an eligible woman you haven't pursued. She held out her hand to him to help her to her feet. Are you mocking my failures? No, I'm lauding them. You see, Adolin, dear, if you hadn't wrecked all those other relationships, you wouldn't be here, with me. She pulled close. And so in reality, you're the greatest at relationships there ever was. You've ruined only the wrong ones, you see. And then they kiss. And then Pattern yells, no mating! She started, pulling out of the kiss to find Pattern hovering beside them. Adolin laughed and Shallan couldn't help joining in. Neither of us is going to mess this up, despite what might at times seem like our best efforts otherwise.
Uh-huh.
Promise, he asked. I promise. Uh-huh. Let's look at this notebook of yours and see what it says about our murderer.
Uh-huh. That's the end of the scene you write before someone messes something up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You don't write stuff like that unless the opposite's gonna happen.
Chapter 14 is titled Squires Can't Capture, and it has Kaladin symbol. The epigraph reads, in this record, I hold nothing back. I will try not to shy away from difficult topics or paint myself in a dishonestly heroic light. From Oathbringer, Preface. Kaladin creeps up on a group of Voidbringers. They were playing cards. Syl landed on his arm, hands on her hips, as she surveyed the Voidbringers. One of them had a set of wooden Herdazian cards. A female sat opposite him. They looked different from what he had expected. They didn't wear war form, though neither did they wear some terrible powerful form. No red eyes, either. The male finally placed a card on the rock next to several others. Can you do that? The female asked. I think so. You said squires can't capture. Unless another card of mine is touching yours, the male said. I think. Kaladin felt cold. They spoke like a Lethi, not a hint of an accent. So, the female said, you're saying you don't know how to play the game after all. The male began gathering up the cards. I should know, Ken. How many times did I watch them play? Standing there with my tray of drinks. I should be an expert at this, shouldn't I? Apparently not. The female stood and walked over to another group who were trying to build a fire without much success. The male who'd been speaking continued to sit on his rock, holding up a wooden card. The parchment looked so forlorn, staring down at his card, shoulders slumped. This is wrong, Kaladin whispered to Syl. We've been so wrong. Where were the destroyers? What had happened to the beast with the red eyes that had tried to crush Dalinar's army? The horrible, haunting figures that Bridge 4 had described to him? We thought we understood what was going to happen, Kaladin thought. I was so sure. Alarm! A sudden shrill voice called. Alarm, you fools! Something zipped through the air, a glowing yellow ribbon, a streak of light in the dim afternoon shade. He's there, the shrill voice said. You're being watched, beneath those shrubs. Kaladin burst up through the underbrush, ready to suck in stormlight and be away. The parchment seized cudgels made from branches or the handles of brooms. They bunched together and held the sticks like frightened villagers. No stances, no control. Kaladin hesitated. These weren't warriors. Syl flitted up to him, preparing to become a blade. No, Kaladin whispered to her. Then he held his hands to the sides, speaking more loudly. I surrender. And that is the end of the chapter. This begins my favorite arc so far in the three books, my favorite storyline so far in the three books for Kaladin. I really love this. This little bit of time he's about to spend with Parshendi, or well, Parshmen.
Is this the book where we get the listeners and other person romance, or is that
no.
the
next
book?
It hasn't even like. Started to happen on page yet, but we know that they're like into each other, but they haven't like started to hook up yet.
Not even by book four.
Oh no, but it's I'm hoping it's gonna happen in book five, but the characters that it's between are gonna be really important in the back half, so it might even wait until
then. And we
then.
Know one of them.
You know both of them.
Wait, we know both of them.
Yes.
Wait, who is
that?
That's
it all I'm going to tell you about it. I can tell you.
I know
later
one of
in
them
book.
Is the one that was part of their team.
One is with Relaine. One is Relaine.
The other another Bridgman?
I'm not telling you. I can tell you later in this book.
Damn.
After they have a scene together that I can point out later. And then I have an image for you. Right here, I'm posting. It's from Shallan's sketchbook. It's a drawing of the corridors of Yirithiru.
I don't like that.
Yeah. This place don't look good, does it? It looks like something is fucking with Shallan about it.
Yeah, don't like that. Where's that other? Oh, that other drawing.
Neither of them look good, do they?
No, Shallan. Shallan, I think you might need a therapist.
Chapter 15, and this is the last chapter we're going to cover this week, is titled Brightness Radiant, and it has Shallan's POV. The epigraph reads, I will express only direct, even brutal truth. You must know what I have done and what those actions cost me. From Oathbringer, Preface. Shallan and Adolin are going over the second murder. The victim was found in the same area as Sadeas, killed the same way, and positioned the same way. Adolin says that it doesn't make sense, since Sadeas was widely hated, but the second victim was well-liked. Shallan is frustrated that there are no connections between the victims, and Adolin suggests that there were two murderers. Shallan thinks that he's just latched onto a theory that he likes and won't let it go. She does think it's weird that there haven't been any rumors of Oathbringer popping up somewhere in the tower. She wonders if the second murder was a decoy, or if there had been more murders of lower class people that just hadn't been reported. She decides that she has to go out and investigate. She's about to send Adolin away when he interrupts her. So, Adolin said, there's something else. Shallan frowned. Shallan, there's something that we need to talk about. Something about you we can't just ignore. Shallan remembers stabbing her mother through the chest and strangling her father while singing to him. Adolin instead points out that she has a shard blade and how exciting that is. He points out that she doesn't know how to use one because she's a woman and wasn't trained. With Yasna, also having been a radiant, Adolin believes that it's time to say to hell with the tradition if women are going to start manifesting shard blades. He asks her about plate, and she says that she doesn't know where plate comes from. It pained Shallan to think of using the weapon that had caused her so much hurt. She wanted to hide, but she couldn't. Adolin goes to get the dull blade guard so they can practice, and as soon as he leaves, Shallan begins to have a panic attack. Pattern said. This is good. This needs to be done. I can't, she said. I can't be this person, Pattern. I can't just wield the sword, some brilliant knight on a tower, pretending she should be followed. She wanted to run, go somewhere, be away. No, just be someone else. Hands shaking, she scrambled over and dug out her drawing pad. Pattern moved over to her. Shallan, please, what is wrong? I can hide, Shallan thought, drawing at a frenzied pace. Shallan can flee and leave someone in her place. It's because you hate me. I can die, Shallan. I can go. They will send you another to bond. Pattern's words were like knives to her side. Vale. Vale would be fine holding a sword. She'd be able to do this. No. What would Adolin do if he returned and found a completely different woman in the room? He couldn't know of Vale. The lines she sketched quickly took the shape of her own face, but hair in a bun. A poised woman, not as flighty as Shallan, not as unintentionally silly. A woman who hadn't been sheltered. A woman hard enough, strong enough to wield this sword. A woman like Yasna. Yes, Yasna's subtle smile, composure, and self-confidence. Shallan outlined her own face with these ideals, creating a harder version of it. Shallan drew in Stormlight from her satchel, then breathed it out in a puff around her. She stood up as the change took hold. Her heartbeat slowed, and she wiped the sweat from her brow, then calmly undid her safe hand sleeve and rolled the sleeve back to expose her still gloved hand. Good enough. Adolin couldn't possibly expect her to put on sparring clothing. She pulled her hair back into a bun. When Adolin returned to the room a moment later, he found a poised, calm woman who wasn't quite Shallan D'Var. Brightness Radiant is her name, she thought. She will go only by title. Adolin has two of the Shardblade guards, but when Radiant summons Pattern, he is able to dull himself so that she doesn't need one. Shallan realizes that she'd made her chest bigger while creating Radiant, and Adolin is staring at it while he summons his Shardblade, presumably making his heartbeat faster. Radiant and Adolin begin to practice her stance so that she doesn't get knocked over easily. Adolin tries to figure out the best way to train her, seeing as she's never been trained with a sword before. I shall settle, Radiant said, for knowing how to avoid cutting off any of my own appendages, Bright Lord Kalin. Bright Lord Kalin? Too formal, right. That was how Radiant would react, of course, but she could allow herself some familiarity. Yasna had done that. Radiant starts to wonder why he'd even taken the Shardblade guards, since all they were doing is practicing stances. He also told her about the practical aspects of wielding one, like how to hold it, walk with it, and avoid slicing people while turning with one. He also gave her more mystical lectures, about how the blade was more than a tool and was a part of her. Adolin has her do a simple strike, and mentions that she just needs to do that 1,000 more times. How I stand, how I think, how I breathe, I have trouble distinguishing what is actually relevant and what is part of the subculture and superstition of swordsmen. It's all relevant, Adolin said. Eating chicken before a match? Adolin grinned. Well, maybe some things are personal quirks, but the swords are a part of us. I know mine is part of me, Radiant said. I've bonded it. I suspect this is the origin of the tradition among shardbearers. So academic, Adolin said, shaking his head. You need to feel this, Shallan. Let it live it. That would not have been a difficult task for Shallan. Radiant, however, preferred not to feel things she hadn't considered in depth before. Have you considered that your shard blade was once a living spren wielded by one of the Knights Radiant? Doesn't that change how you look at it? Adolin glanced toward his blade. I've always kinda known. Not that it was alive. That's silly. Swords aren't alive. I mean, I've always known there was something special about them. It's part of being a duelist, I think. We all know it. Radiant thinks that swordsmen were very superstitious, as were sailors. As were basically everyone but scholars like Radiant and Yasna. She thought that Adolin's lecturing about blades reminded her of religion. They do some more strikes, and then Radiant bleeds away to Shallan so that she can sketch Adolin while he practices his stances. By now, he'd removed his jacket, standing in only shirt and trousers. She did like how that tight shirt fit him. Even Radiant would admire that. She wasn't dead, just pragmatic.
Shallan, don't force yourself to have dissociative personality disorder, please.
She looked over the two sketches, then resummoned Pattern and fell into position. Hey, nice, Adolin said as Radiant performed the next few strikes. Yeah, you've got it. He again fell in beside her. His blue eyes were alight, and Shallan loved seeing that glow from him, almost like Stormlight. Sharing these moments with him and drinking of his excitement felt special, intimate. She could let herself be Shallan in some of the moments, but whenever the pain of holding the sword started to spike, she was able to become Radiant and avoid it. At long last, Shallan bade a tired, sweaty farewell to Adolin. Shallan would have to wait another night to visit taverns and hunt for answers. She trailed back into her room, strangely contented for all that the world might be in the middle of ending. That night, she slept for once in peace. In peace. And that is where we're going to be done for now.
Shallan. But
yes, that chapter is the first time that Shallan disassociates.
Shallan, please don't. I mean, she already did it kind of, but it wasn't that she consciously had multiple personalities. It's just like, I have this version that I pretend to be, and then there's that other version of me that I had as a child that's not me. I don't do that. And now she has two active versions of herself, and I don't like it.
This is the first time on page when it changed. The book no longer reads Shallan said, Shallan did. It is Radiant said, or Radiant did. And as we'll go forward, also, you'll see Vale did.
Yeah, no, I think that I don't like the nickname Radiant. It's stupid.
Yeah, that's what she calls this version, this identity.
I don't like it. It's stupid. She should have come up with a better name.
I think it works when you look at, like, Vale, because Vale was supposed to be the veil that disguised her, you know?
Well, Radiant is, like, the position.
The Radiant,
Radiant, yes, is when... who she's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But not who she is.
Yes. Vale, and Vale is the disguise. This is a... Sanderson says he's not trying to write dissociative identity disorder. He's very clear about that. He's very clear that he's taking influence from dissociative identity disorder and then twisting it with how the magic interacts with it. But he does... I don't know if he did for this
book. It's literally just magical dissociative personality disorder.
I have to look in the...
I know he's not trying to like perfectly write it, but that's what it is.
I have to look in my acknowledgements for this book. I don't think he did for this one. I know in Rhythm of War, he worked with people that have dissociative identity disorder to make sure that he wrote sections of that book correctly. And I know that whenever he's writing something like this, he makes sure to, like, show it to people that, like, actually deal with it. So I'm sure that people with DID or that are experts on DID...
probably okayed it.
Okayed this book, but I know for certain that Rhythm of War, in the acknowledgments, he mentioned somebody. He mentioned specific people.
That's good. I'd like to see how an actual, like, psychologist breaks it down.
You should talk to my friend Chad about how he likes it, because he's not a psychologist. He's a therapist. He went to school.
Yeah.
He actually is about to graduate from his
I guess
master's
psychologist, or his graduate, or whatever. Just to figure out what you have and diagnose it, while therapists like help you work through your problems.
Yeah,
but they still have to know all of the psychology stuff. So
yes, and I remember after reading this book and reading Rhythm of War, because this is the book where everybody gets worse. Shulan is not going to get better from this in this book. After when I was reading these, I was talking to Chad. I was like, "How do you feel about what he's writing, because you know way more than I do about this." So like, I think he pretty much nails it. He says that like DID is a very controversial subject in the mental health, world. People have like conflicting ideas of what's actually happening, but that,
well, I mean, obviously it's happening different ways for different people. So that makes sense.
Yeah, it's all very fascinating, and it's a lot more than I try to understand. Whenever I'm reading Shallan, I go to Chad, and I'm like, how do you feel about this? What do you think? Next week, to tease you, we're going to start next week, the first chapter, with a really big Dalinar moment.
Ooh.
Like, a really big Dalinar moment. It is the next chapter, so...
Is there we'll a really good big Dalinar moment, or a really bad big Dalinar? Big Dalinar moment.
It's just a really big moment that then leads to good things and very bad things. But the status quo will shift.
Does he meet his wife?
Raffo, I'm not gonna tell you what happens next time, obviously, because we're about to go into it. But
okay.
It is literally the next chapter. But
I guess I'll find out on Thursday.
You will find out on Thursday when we start.
Now I'm concerned.
I'm very excited. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you guys next time when, Dalinar has some shit happen. We have a Discord. Join that. Link is in the description. Follow us on Twitter if it still exists, at SpeakStormlight. Email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter if it still exists, at Sean_AFK. And if it still exists, also follow our good friend Alex, who made the cover art, the juice cover art, the goated cover art that is currently also the Discord server icon. That is so awesome. Whenever I look over at it, I'm like, man, this is fucking so cool.
It is.
At Alex_BigBoy, there's a link in the episode description. Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.